You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello and welcome to Thursday's episode of a Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am Craig Fowler and I am joined once again by Joel Skidd.
Hello.
And we are doing another one of our top 12 countdowns, but this year there's a little bit of a difference. So, historically, we would do the 12 best wide midfielders and the 12 best centre midfielders. That always presented a little bit of a problem, especially once you would get kind of wide and central, you know, for instance, the 3-4-3. If somebody plays, it is one of the wide men in that front three, or the central, or the wide. Because they're
Ryan
kind of a
Christie.
Combination of both. Yep, Ryan Christie, what the hell is he? You also have the problem, which we done last year, so we changed it a little bit last year, where, what did we do last year again? Oh yeah, we cut out. So I think we just done midfielders and attacking midfielders. And that therefore meant that we were doing the attacker central or on the wing as one, and the guys who were further back as others. The problem, at least the problem when I found when I was researching that, was that we had guys like Hakim Adolphin being compared to guys like Joe Newell. And it didn't really make a lot of sense. Like, very different types of players. Although both of them would be in this list, funnily enough, so that's not the best example. But
I was just thinking that.
So there is still a problem. But basically, to get rid of that problem, we'd have to do about four or five different podcasts and break down every single position. So yeah, I did not explain that very well at all. But so we're going to have three this year to take care of a set of midfielders and see how that works itself. Not the set of midfielders in general. And we'll see how that works itself out. So we're going to have top 12 defensive midfielders, as we're doing today. Now, defensive midfielders were basically including anybody that you wouldn't call an attacking midfielder. So there's going to be guys in here you would say is probably more of a number 8 than a number 6. But we kind of have to cut the limit somewhere, not just record too many podcasts of these to go through each individual position. Because we're doing that, we may as well start to do it between like wing-backs and full-backs as well, and that's just far too messy. Not bothering with all that.
Because even
it may be too messy
that,
already with this change, to be honest. But yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Because there's going to be Celtic players who are probably number eights, but because the way Celtic play, they're just classed as attacking midfielders.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I've only got one Celtic player in this list. And
I've got two.
I've got one Celtic player and a whole host of Rangers players. Just because the way their midfield is kind of shaped and split up, and you kind of see them. So yeah, it was It was interesting to put together. So, like, for example, Lewis Ferguson, that was a difficult... I think the three we had, three we were not sure about was Ian Harkes, Dylan Levitt, and Lewis Ferguson. And we ended up pushing Ferguson and Harkes up. And you could make an argument... Certainly, I think you can make an argument for Ferguson to be in this list because he has probably played a bit deeper. He's been into, and he would have definitely been in the top 12 in this list, but he's been pushed up.
Yeah, so he's in the attacking. So there'll be another one that's attacking midfielders, and then we'll do another one which is wide midfielders, and then we'll do forwards. Hopefully, we can fit all these in by the time it's into the season, which is very soon. But anyway, oh well, we'll see how we go. So this is defensive midfielders, including some number eights that just aren't too attacking. I already feel this is a mess. We're also going to change this again next year, aren't we? We just go back to wide players and centre midfielders and try to make it easier. We've maybe complicated a bit more, but it's okay. We're here now. We've got our list. Joel, who's your number 12?
My number 12. Well, I found this firstly difficult to narrow it down to 12 players. I think that my long list. Well, my short long list. We had a long list of 46, and then which I narrowed down to about 15. And then down to 12, which I found getting it down to 12 was difficult, and then the placings within the 12 were difficult. So this could be all over the place. But my number 12 is Heart of Midlothian Dreamboat, Peter Haring.
I've got higher, and you will not be shocked to learn.
No, I was deliberating whether to include him or not, and then spent a large portion of Sunday evening with Peter Haring, and I was like, he is definitely getting in. Because he put up with my drunken shit, so he deserves a place in my top 12. The reason I was kind of deliberating is because he's not really been first choice for Hearts this season, and he's never. It's probably onto the last few months where I've actually thought or felt that he's wanted at Hearts. There's always a part of me. The last couple of seasons, whether Nielsen really rated him as a player, but the comments from Nielsen recently is like really, I think, hammered home just how that he does rate him. He does want him to be part of his squad and going forward. There's still that still issue over his contract, but throughout part of the season, I found he was a wee bit inconsistent. So like when he's good, he's very, very good, and you can really appreciate what he brings to that midfield. But then there's every now and then he'll have an off game, and he just looks far off the pace. But in the last couple of months, especially injuries to Devlin, injuries to Benny Beningame, he's really come to the fore, and he's probably his best football since his long-term injury, where he missed a full season. Probably his best football since he was one of the best centre midfielders in the league.
Yeah,
he's never been the most mobile, and they're still talking to pals. There still is that question mark over mobility, but his reading of the game is excellent. And one thing that I think he excels in, and he's better at than Suter, is his switch of play. I think he's really good at especially dropping into kind of right-hand side position just in front of the defence, and just a sweeping ball over the top. There's one in the win over, I was going to say Dundee United, but it might be in Ross County. The game played behind closed doors, cracking ball over the top for, ended up Ben Woodburn scoring. So, deliberated, and I've put him in at 12. To be honest, I would be happy to have him much, much higher. He does deserve, especially the trajectory of his plays to get back in the team.
He's a tremendous stopper in terms of just denying the opposition, and really with these kind of bulk and size. And yeah, I do agree with you that it's become slightly less effective because his mobility has been hampered since that long spell he spent out through injury. I mean, he was out for like 15 months, but even apart from that, he barely played in the second half of that season because he was kind of nursing the injury. So he really, kind of, for the best part of, like, you know, almost 18 months, really, that he barely played. And he has lost a little bit of quickness on the turn, because quickness in general through that. And you're right, there are some games where that can show up. It's not really, and again, as you said, it's not really been the case recently. I just love how much that he controls tempos of games often when he's in the centre of the park. And he just is, he can be so dominant. Like, you saw it in the most recent game against Ross County, where he was probably Hart's best player, and that was kind of just what he was doing. He wasn't doing anything too flashy. County weren't posing as much of a threat that he really needed to be, like, heroic and, you know, step in front of balls all the time. But he was just getting on the ball and making sure that Hearts were able to dictate the tempo and the pace of that game. And that's what one of the things he does very well. And, yeah, so I've got him a bit higher than you. But my number 12, and this is... So my list when I got down it was only 13 names, but it was very hard to pick between 12... between two teammates. Because I wanted to only include one and not include the other, because I have another player here that I quite like and who's plays for a different club. And as usual, I like to be the socialist. I like to spread around the love. So I was left with one of two players for one team. And I have gone for, at number 12, Livingston's Jason Holt.
I have got him slightly higher. And yeah, I think the one you left out was Stefan Omeunga.
Yes.
Yes, yes, same. He was probably number 13 or 14 on my list.
Yeah, I've dinged Omeunga for the fact that his form's dipped a bit recently. I think he's out. I think he's out at the moment through injury, but he definitely took a bit of a nosedive in form before then. And the game against Hearts really stands out to me. The game against Hearts, the game against Celtic not long ago as well, two really poor performances from him.
Yep.
The ceiling is definitely higher on Omeunga in terms of what you're going to get for a game. He is somebody that really can. I mean, we saw it at Easter Road earlier this season. He's a guy who can run a game by himself. He'd done it twice against him. He'd done it in the 1-0 victory, which proved to be Jack Ross the last game as well.
But he can do it just through energy.
I think Jason Holt just displays a much better level of consistency in that Livingston midfield, and has probably been their player of the season so far. At least that's what Ian Hall told me on the Patreon. But he's somebody that's reinvented himself.
Just for clarification, is that a relation to Jason Holt?
Who, Ian Hall?
Yeah, just for knowing that, for people that may be thinking, they just realise Ian Holt says Jason Holt's the player of the season.
No, I said Ian Hall. Hall.
Oh, Ian Hall, sorry.
H-A-L-L.
Sorry, it sounded like Holt. Pardon me,
no,
carry
no
on.
Relation, no relation considering they have different last names. So Holt is somebody who reinvented himself, was a number 10 at Hearts. Displayed at times the qualities that you kind of want for a number 10, but just really didn't impact the game enough in terms of goal scoring and in terms of assists and what basically you need from a number 10. Excellent technique, brilliant in the fact that he plays the game with his head up, but just didn't quite have enough vision or, you know, ability in his shooting to really be a top flight player at that position. He goes down to Rangers in the Championship, where he plays mainly as a number 8 in that system, and he looked very good, and I kind of thought it would translate well to being a top flight player, because he scored 10 goals in the season that Rangers won the title, and I thought that would... I did actually think he would be able to make the step up no problem, but he stepped up and his goal tally fell off a cliff. He was still working hard, he was still able to drive the ball forward, he was still a fairly popular player in a team that wasn't all that popular, but it was clear that he had his limitations and he'd gone out as far as he could and really in a Rangers jersey in the top flight. He then bounces around a bit, doesn't really do much, ends up at Livingston, and this is, funnily enough, this is what I said years ago when he was at Hearts. Is that I thought Jason Holt had a lot of attributes to be a number 6, but it just didn't seem plausible at the time, because he's small, he's short, he's very thin, and you just didn't think, you can't have that guy in front of your defence protecting them. But what he is he's feisty. He is not afraid of a tackle or a foul or a booking. And he, despite the fact he must be about 5'7" and, you know, about 7 stone soaking wet, he's somebody that does not back down. He plays with a lot of heart, and he's a player I still just enjoy watching to this day. I'm very happy that he's managed to forge himself a very successful career in the Scottish top flight.
Yeah, I think it's helped that football has evolved, that Scotland's usually slower than what I see on the continent, but then you've got at the early to mid 2000s that you've seen a bit more. There's diminutive football players were taking up these central positions, and where it was more where they were able to showcase their on the ball qualities as much as the off the ball. And certainly Jason Holt has that. But like I said, he's got that feistiness, and he reads the game well. He does really well for interceptions per 90 minutes. Top 10 in this defensive midfielders for successful defensive actions per 90 minutes. And I think I talked about on the view from the terrace is that he is someone who. You won't see much of him on highlights, but he gives Livingston a platform to play. I was a wee bit frustrated. I was watched him on Saturday in the win over Hibs. A wee bit frustrated by him a couple of times where he'd get the ball at the base of midfield and like a forward passes on. He could split the lines. He didn't really take it, but overall, you can see that he gives Livingston a wee bit of time. In possession, he gives freedom to Shinny or Omyonga if he plays, or Scott Pittman to go forward, and then he supports play, gets his foot stuck in, but you can trust him with the ball. So I think it's been a really beneficial Martindale moving him to a number six and getting the best out of him, because he looks like he could play that position in the Premiership for a number of years more.
Right, who's your number 11?
Number 11 is, if my documents were up, my number 11 is, so similar to you with Livingston, it was between two players from one club, and ultimately it came down to a player I just prefer, and that's Hibernian's Jake Doyle-Hayes.
Ah, I don't have him at all.
So
didn't cross my mind. I think he's just been quite poor this season, to be honest.
So I put him in there just because I like him as a player, and going back to I think I really liked him at St Mirren. But there's aspects. The key thing that happened at St Mirren's happened to Hibs, where he's had his form's really patchy.
Yeah.
But when he is on his game, he is. I think he's a tremendous footballer. You see the couple of goals he scored early this season, earlier this year. That ability, I think he can mix play when the Hibs have played Hearts, not played that well. I thought he has been, when I've watched Hibs, he to me has always caught the eyes, having a positive performance, even if the team aren't great. And I chose him over Joe Newell because I know there's a lot of love for Joe Newell among some Hibs fans, amongst some of the folk on the terrace, but I'm not sold on him. I think he's very neat and tidy on the ball. I think he's someone, if he was had a right foot, I don't think he would get as much credit. I think he's got his left foot, he looks better, but I don't think he's a very good defender. He's at times reminds me of Liam Donnelly when he was playing defensive midfield. I know it's a slightly different position because he's more of a number 8 for Hibs, but I don't think he's quite there in being able to play in a midfield too. I think Jake Doyle-Hayes can play in a midfield too that Hibs have had this season. Joe Newell, I don't think he's as solid defensively. You look at my document's been really slow. Where are you, Mr. Joe Newell? Yeah, so fouls he's top 10 for fouls per 90 minutes, lowest for defences, duels per 90, but he does really well on the ball. Jake Doyle-Hayes is he's good at mixing it, like I said, but also playing the ball forward. So yeah, I don't think either have had brilliant seasons. Hibs as a whole haven't had brilliant seasons, but he gets in onto much just because I like him. But again, to be honest, if you had asked me, would I prefer Jake Doyle-Hayes in midfield or Peter Haring? It'd be Peter Haring all day.
Yeah, definitely. Right, my number 11 is Motherwell's Callum Slattery.
Oh, didn't consider him.
Ah, really? That's I think he's been. Overall, I think he's been Motherwell's best player this season.
Things, yeah, things.
Joel, remember, they're still sixth.
I know, but I don't know if I had, had a real issue with Motherwell this season. I just can't get on board with them. I just can't get on board. And Sal Lattery's, yeah, been one of their better players, but I've had an issue with their midfield since the start of the season. And his makeup, I don't think he's. I think he's a good player. I think he's been one of their better players, but one of the best midfielders in Scotland. Nah.
One of the best defensive midfielders here. Come on,
defensive midfielders.
And the reason I like him, he is—he's very feisty. He's one of these guys. He's similar to Lewis Ferguson in that he's very high up for fouls given away, but he's also very high up for fouls won. He loves to battle in the centre of the park, but more than that, he's a good player. He's somebody that gets forward to support the attack quite well, gets into the box, gets some chances by himself. He's somebody that can create a bit for others. He can drive the play forward. He can pass the play forward. He's not somebody that always settles for sideways passing. He likes to be proactive in the way that he plays the game. And Motherwell are undoubtedly a better team when he's in it. And it was either stubborn or stupid from Alexander not to play him for that stretch of games where Motherwell were hopeless. Slattery sat on the bench. And it was really no other reason other than rumours that Alexander had fallen out with him. And it's daft because he's come back at the team and immediately they got a bit better. They're still pretty rubbish, but they're certainly better side with Slattery in it. And I think he's a very good player. And I'm a bit surprised you don't have him in your list, but I kind of get that you've just been maybe... It's maybe a little bit biased there because of just how shit the Motherwell are and have been to watch for a lot of the campaign.
I think you make a good point in the fact you said one of the best defensive midfielders in the league, and I think I've probably been harsh on him. But I think it's almost been take Tony Watt away from Motherwell, like his performances when he was at Motherwell. Slattery's been the kind of best of a bad bunch, and I'd be keen to see certain players in this Motherwell team under different management. Again, they still could qualify for Europe, but I think that's a damning indictment of certain aspects of the Scottish Premiership, because you look at Motherwell comments and just how frustrated they've been with the style of play, the direction under Alexander. I just don't want to use the word luck, because I think over 33 games, if you're in the top six, you deserve to be in the top six. But fucking hell, I've not liked them. Not liked them.
Who's your number 10?
Jason Holt.
Ah, cool.
Jason Holt.
My number 10 is Dylan Levitt.
I've got him slightly higher.
Yeah, so he's somebody that's, like we said, this is somebody we had a bit of problem with, because he's not really... Talk about him as a defensive midfielder seems a bit of a stretch, but...
He didn't feature anywhere in the high up in kind of the defensive metrics, which wasn't really surprising.
No, he did not. he did not. but he is... He's probably... He probably still maybe counts, because he's more of a kind of deep-lying playmaker, but he's somebody that does get... But still with the ability to get forward and impact the game further up. But he's somebody, like, I looked at his, because when we were trying to decide of him, Harkes and Ferguson, who was going to go into this, and I was like, Levitt probably does count, because I looked at his heat map on Y-Scout, and it did look more like a deeper player's heat map rather than Ferguson and Harkes, which had a lot of heat in and around the penalty box, and Levitt's not really that much. His was more kind of sides and the channels kind of thing, rather than kind of attacking through the centre. So
just allow me to jump in there, and I think just to add to what you're saying about the heat map is that you've seen Levitt, I think, especially recently, be more proactive in the final third in recent games. But I think that's because Ian Harkes isn't there.
Yeah, that's probably true. But somebody, a terrific, the best thing about Levitt, he's a good player, he's got good technique, you can trust him on the ball, you give him the ball and know it's not going to bounce off him, and when he gets the ball, you know he's going to pick out a teammate. He's a very good passer, his shots are, in fact, his goals are incredible, because even the one he scored against Hearts, where he dribbled it around two players and then stuck it in the far corner, I mean, he only scores absolute, you know, top class finishes, really, or top class goals in general, which is quite a good trait to have. And he's really impressed ever since he really walked into the door. One of these signings that you get from a big club in England. And yeah, I mean, he's been in the Welsh squad before. He's been in the Welsh squad this season, but you still don't know what that means as well. I mean, I mean, compare him to Ben Woodburn, for instance, who has not had the same type of impact for Hearts. He's come for Liverpool. He played for Wales before. So Levitt was somebody you didn't know what was going to work out, but right away you could see he was a good player. And I think he's really come to the fore. I think it was maybe a little bit inconsistent earlier in the campaign, but in the last, you know, 2-3 months, I think he's really stepped up and been almost a talismanic figure for that United midfield.
Yeah, so I've got him a couple places higher. Yeah, so I've got him 8th. I've put him in there because of probably talent ceiling that has he been. He's not been the most consistent player. I think he's had his peaks and troughs, but he's someone that going into United games. United haven't been. I think United have been a better side than Motherwell, but United, I wouldn't pay that much money to watch them, because I don't think they've been a fun team to watch. But when Dylan Levitt plays, you know you've got someone that you can watch over, and you look forward to seeing. His goal against Hearts was incredible. Scored one a few weeks prior. I can't remember who it was against another screamer, but the one against Hearts was David Silva-esque, just the way he went round players. I mean, he not made Peter Haren, and I think those moments just show you just how talented he is. You can tell that the way he is on the ball, that he's had very, very good coaching, and he's just a very, very good technical football player. It was interesting because Courts, after the Hearts game, was asked about Levitt and about the goal, and he said, "Oh, great goal," but he said he was disappointed because he wanted more from him in terms of controlling the game, because after 10-15 minutes, United just fell out of the match. It was a young midfield, but Courts was wanting him to step up and do that. So there's still that element of his game that needs it. But in terms of talent and where he could go, it is very, very high. So I do think he has been he's a fine footballer.
Right, who is your number 9?
This is probably going to be a controversial one, considering he's not played there all that much this season, but I think he makes the team much better when he does. Even then, they've still been shit. Ross McCrory.
I really did think about him. I did think about him. He was, like I say, I only put 13 on my long list, but I did really consider McCrory to add to that.
I get it. It was, so like, Conor Barron's really impressed me, but can he go on the back of half a season?
Too small a sample size for him.
Yeah, whereas McCrory's played there before. He's played there before, and I think that is his best position. I just think McCrory is a centre midfielder who's just built to play in the Scottish Premiership, and probably be able. You could probably go down south and play in it, but he's combative. Right,
if Loic de Moor played a part in Cardiff City being promoted to the Premier League, then Ross McCrory can play in the Championship. Yes.
But I think centre midfield is his best position, because he's got his physical qualities are brilliant. He can battle. He's really combative. One of the best games I've seen from him this season was against Dundee again, finished 2-2. But because he's playing ahead of Declan Gallagher and David Bates, who have had really poor seasons, McCrory can. He's really good on the ball. I think he can rest the game with his passing. I think he's good passing. But when he's on the ball, he can go from A to B with the ball, just dribbling. He's just that powerful presence who can just break lines just through through his kind of dynamism. Good footballing brain. I can just think he can be a solid presence in midfield. And depending on how you want to shape your midfield, I think he can play as an 8, he can play as a 6. He can play as more of a kind of almost, I'd say, a destructive 10. So if you're playing, I don't know, Rangers or Celtic, you could probably play him higher up and maybe disrupt Celtic or Rangers play through Callum McGregor or Lundstrom, whoever, etc. So I think there's a lot of qualities to McCrory. And yes, been a shit season for Aberdeen. He's played at right back, he's played at centre back, but he's by far the best in the centre midfield.
Okay, let's move on to my number 9, and I have got the man you don't really rate. I've got Joe Neal as my number 9.
Okay.
I think Joe Neal is a smashing player, and honestly, if it wasn't for the fact that he's had such a poor season, because Hibs have had such a poor season in general. And I'm not even really putting a lot of it on him. He's played in midfield that's not really suited him. He's played with a partner that doesn't really suit him. And without the kind of number 10 that he could really... if Kyle McGinnis was fit for a lot of this campaign with Joe Neal giving balls to Kyle McGinnis, that would really work well for Hibs. But he's not really had that for most of the year. So it's maybe not even... It's maybe a bit harsher on him because I've dinged him so much. Because otherwise, I would put him in my top six for this. Because I think he's really good. I think in terms of his vision and how creative he can be for the centre of the park, I think he's just excellent in terms of that aspect of his game and his passing ability to play through the lines, to make opportunities for the guys in front of him, to move with the ball as well. He can dribble round people. That's why Paul Heckenbottom stupidly put him on the wing, is because he does have that ability. He's also somebody who's... He's a more... When you compare it with Jake Doyle Hayes, I would say Jake Doyle Hayes is a better defender. I don't think that there's any doubt about that. But Joe Newell is a much more braver player than Doyle Hayes is. Like, he takes chances with the ball and he makes things happen. Doyle Hayes, for me, just so much of the time, the safest passing going, where it's just like, this is all you want to do today, is just give it sideways to somebody else. Whereas Newell tries to get in the front foot, gets forward, makes things happen. Yeah, he could really do with cutting out some of the daft fouls that he gives away. As Hibs fans pointed out, like, he really likes the stupid kind of late lunge, like the one that he'd done on, was it Barry Mackay in the semi-final? But it's not really any point. It was a Haran, Haran, where you're not going to get the ball, there's no point, and he's just kind of lunging in late, and he gets himself far too many yellow cards and sometimes a red card off the back of that, and that's something he needs to get rid of. He's kind of get out of his game if he's going to be an elite level player. But I just still think he's very, very good, and if it wasn't for him having a poor season, I think I would have him in my top six.
I just can't buy into the Joe Newell hype.
Okay, who's your number eight?
Even last season when Hibs were doing well, there was something about him I just couldn't get my head around. But anyway, my number eight, I think I've already said it was Dylan Levitt.
My number eight's Peter Haran.
Number seven? I think that's a more accurate representation of the handsome Austrian's quality.
Right, who's your number seven then?
Now it's time for the maroon tinted spectacles. It is Benny Beningui.
Oh, I've got him higher.
I've got a very old firm heavy top five, so it's a hearts 7-6.
Okay, all right. Well, you've gone. Well, we'll get to my list when we get to them. But yeah, I do have the two players you're talking about. Benny Beningui, I have him higher. I also, the other player talking about is Cammy Devlin. I have him ahead of Cammy Devlin. I think he's a better player.
Yes, so I thought you might, and I could understand why so many do. So I'll just speak to them both in general. I think Benny Beningui is such a class act, really intelligent football player, shields the ball so well. I really like a player who can shield the ball. I think it's such a brilliant quality for a footballer to have, especially in the middle of the park. Yeah, the hectic nature of a Premiership midfield. Defensively, he's great. I think we spoke about on the podcast before. Just that leg. He's able to like just twist his and just get his leg into really awkward situations and kind of scoop the ball away.
He's number one amongst all these players, so all 45 of them. I think the list ended up being 45 because I cut two and added one who we'll get to, who we decided was a defensive midfielder and added him late. So out of 45 players, he's number one for defensive duo percentage.
Yeah, incredibly
with that stat, he's also third fewest fouls given away per 90 minutes.
Yeah,
he only tackles cleanly.
Yeah, which is remarkable because the angles he comes in and he like scoops the ball away. He's like in some sort of crystal maze.
He sometimes dives in and you think he's surely giving away a foul there, and then he comes away with the ball.
Yeah, I really like. I just think he is a lovely player, a brilliant pickup. He did go off the boil before his injury. When I say off the boil, yeah. Had a few poorer games compared to how well he started. Whereas Devlin, he is going to be the player the hill I die on, because I wrote a gushing article when he signed for Hearts, and I'm sticking to my guns. But with Devlin, I think you've got just the someone who could be, in Scottish football terms, certainly Scottish football terms, the ultimate all-action midfielder. He's just, I think he's really good at, I mean, I've just got the his ability. Successful, like top 10 for successful defensive actions per 90, top 10 for interceptions per 90. I think he's in the bottom 10 for, top 10 for fewest fouls per 90, which
Sorry, Joe, you're selling him short here. He is number one for successful defensive actions per 90, number one for defensive duels per 90, and number one for slide tackles per 90. And, not on the same topic, but another number one, he's number one for touches in the penalty box.
Yeah, so that's it. I was going to flip on his the attacking side. He's top 10 for accurate forward pass success and key pass per 90 as well. So he's getting the ball. When he gets the ball, he wants to play forward. And that's, I just think he's the perfect Hearts midfielder, because he's someone who's going to noise up opposition. He's going to put himself about. He's going to run himself into the ground. But when he gets the ball, he is going to try and play forward. He wants to be positive. When he's not got the ball, he's going to move into the box. I think he's added to that as the season's progressed, that he's going to make runs into the box. I just think there's so many different facets of his game which have him into, should probably have him beyond Benny Beningame. And a big thing is, he's a tempo setter without being setting the tempo off the game. So you talked about Haren, is like when he's on the ball, he can dictate the game. Whereas Devlin can do it again with that tempo, with his energy and his attitude, which fans respond to. Joe Savage was talking about at our Foundation of Hearts meeting I was at recently, and he was talking about the semi-final against Hibs, where we were struggling in the second half. We had a shit second half, and then he thought that when Devlin came on, he helped change the game and bring it back into Hearts' favour, and he was just disruptive. He just got in Hibs' faces. There was an incident with Porteous, and he's just started making tackles and making things happen, and Devlin can do that with and without the ball. So I think it's been a really good first season. I think there's a lot more to come from him.
Yeah, I would just say that I've got Beningame higher, because I think Devlin does have a tendency to suffer from headless chicken syndrome at times, when he just gets a little bit too...
Hearts fans love that. They love that.
I know, but I prefer... I think Beningame can be a bit more effective with his discipline about staying within the role in the team that he needs to be in. Mm. But I do take the point that Devlin is more impactful going forward, and you can maybe say that for that reason he's a more all-rounded player. I would also say, though, I think that Beningame is a better technical player as well. So it's very... And the funny thing is, I've got both these players ahead of Peter Haring in this list, but I think Hearts maybe function a bit better when Haring partners with one of them, as opposed to them two playing together.
Yeah, I definitely... There's an argument there. Argument for that.
Right, my number seven, it really gives me no credit, gives me no pleasure to include this guy as my number seven, because I'm just going to, as I've said in a previous podcast, I'm sick of the sight of him in Scottish football, and I really don't think he's much of a standard for the team he's at. But I have to think, how would he fare as a defensive midfielder on every other team in the league? And I think, yeah, pretty good. And I was originally going to leave him off because I didn't think he'd played that much this season. Then I looked at Soccer Base and I think he's played about 40 games. So I was like, okay, well, I can't leave him off for that. So I'm just going to have to do it and say that my number seven is Celtic's Nir Beaton.
I had a feeling he might have him. I didn't consider him. He's played 22 games in the league, maybe. He's played 37 games in all competitions. Don't know how many starts in the league. There we go.
He has,
11.
When he has
11 starts
played,
in the league.
When he has played and he has started, he's played well. Maybe 11 starts in the league was enough. I usually bump off a Celtic or Rangers player for that little bit. So I've got him here now. I may as well talk about him.
He's played quite a few of his certainly starts as a centre back as well.
Hmm. get to fuck that. No, I think he has played well as a defensive midfielder this season when he's played there under Ange Postecoglou. Somebody else who's probably improved through playing for the Australian, as a number of Celtic players has. But he does have a lot to his game. He's somebody who...
Is there anyone that's not improved?
Oh, good question.
James McCarthy. just in general.
I was actually looking at James McCarthy's stats, and I've got an opinion that James McCarthy would be a very good defensive midfielder for anybody else in the league, maybe even Rangers as well. But the way that Celtic played does just not suit him whatsoever.
Just going on stats. James McCarthy and Darren McGregor, two of the best players in the league.
He's part of the Darren McGregor All Stars, is he? Oh boy, I love players like that. Remember Mark Connolly was in? Was it last season? Mark Connolly, he was like the stats absolutely loved him. You're like, really, this guy?
And you can understand why some clubs get drawn into certain players and think, oh, he's got to be worth a signing. So I'd love to go back and check Rafa Grzelak's stats from the season before Hart signed him.
Oh no, I did. Rafał Grzelak was number 2 overall in the Polish top flight for dribbling percentage. Second best dribbler, according to the stats, in the Polish top flight before he came home.
I'm sure this is not meant to be a joke, but I'm sure there's 2 Rafa Grzelaks.
No, I'm pretty sure I had the right one. I hope I had the right one. Otherwise, I just wrote an article based upon somebody else. Oh, it's fine. That was about 3 years ago anyway. Nobody cares.
Going back to near beat on, yeah. Probably should have considered him, but. And if I did, then you'd have to. He's one of those players that you'd have to be in. I just think that it's almost like. I don't want to say he's been kind of forgotten because he has been the backup to Callum McGregor, but I think he's been easy to forget.
Progresses the ball well. In terms of both his passing and moving with it, he is somebody who really is not the greatest of passers in terms of, you know, vision or whatever, but he's somebody that will keep the ball for your side. He very, very rarely gives it away. I think he's an average defender, to be honest, at centre back, but at defensive midfield, those attributes obviously kind of shine a bit more because it's a bit of an easier position to play, to put in your defensive abilities. So he's good in the air in that sense. He's good at. He does a lot. He gets a lot of interceptions. He's somebody that's just quite good at just denying opponents and sitting in front of the back four. I'm just, like I said, just sick of this. It's like I'm just hanging around the squad because he can play two positions fairly well for Celtic. I'm just like, surely, get rid.
Give Soro a chance. Be too harsh.
Right, who's your number 6?
It was Benningame then Devlin.
Okay, so I have got Devlin at number 6. I have Benningame at number 5. Who's your 5?
Oh, so I think you must have left someone off this, a Rangers player off this list.
I've only got 3 Rangers players.
Okay, so this is the start of one of 4 Rangers players. John Lundstrom.
Who the hell else have I left off then? Because if you got Lundstrom... Right, okay, well, I guess we'll have to find this when it comes to it. I might have just forgotten something. I've got Lundstrom one place higher.
Lundstrom, I was toying with having him higher because over the season, I think he's actually been a really good signing for Rangers. You looked at when they first signed with him.
Particularly recently, because if you compare him to another player who we're going to talk about very soon, I'm sure, he's definitely had a better season.
Oh, yeah, so that's what I was going to say is that there's probably... There's arguments that he could be the top of these 4 Rangers players, but the other 3 have gone on the basis of what they've done before and my preference. But Lundstrom, Rangers signed a guy with a lot of Premier League or Championship experience on a free contract, and then when he first came in, he looked like he had a positive impact. Then he just his form. And his influence kind of just died a death, but especially under Giovanni Van Bronckhorst in Europe, he's been absolutely fantastic. And it's certainly in specific games he's given Rangers a steal that maybe under Gerrard they I don't want to say they lack because they played a certain style, but I think in certain games you do need that physicality, that steel, and he's provided them. And he's come up with big moments as well. That goal against Dortmund is not something you'd expect from Lundstrom in terms of his role within the team, but is sometimes I think he's passing maybe might not be as progressive as Ryan Jack. It might not be as like Stephen Davis, the deep kind of deep line playmaker, but he keeps it ticking over. He's just, I think he's just basically, he's just a safety net for Rangers, and I think he's performed it really, really well.
Yeah, I don't really have anything much to add to that. He's, yeah, just with his abilities, he's got good ability on the ball, which really didn't show up early in the Rangers campaign, but I think that probably spoke to how little he suited things when he first stepped into the side. And I think with the playing him in one of the kind of more advanced roles, I can't really remember now, but yeah, he really struggled to begin with, but it's kind of shown that he's a good passer of the ball. And just as, I mean, just the size of the guy as well. He's bloody huge. Like, yeah. It's got to be something that plays in the mind of opposition players when you're trying to run through the Rangers midfield and he's coming towards you, because he's so broad and so powerful, and somebody that just uses the ball very well but also wins it back very well. So yeah, John Lundstrom, aye, number, similar position to kind of you, but who is your number four? I'm just getting eager to find out who I've left out here.
Number four is Glenn Kamara.
Right, I'm definitely getting confused now because I've got Kamara as well. Okay. Right, who the fuck have I forgotten? Right, okay. Yeah, Glenn Kamara, I've got him again. One place higher, number three.
He has... I think everyone listening to the podcast knows what Glenn Kamara is about, but he's not had a great season. And not...
Especially
a game under... I think there's certain players who are, it just seems to have, like pre Van Bronckhorst and under Van Bronckhorst, like Morelos just really kicked on, Lundstrom really kicked on, Kamara just, you've been used in different ways, it just hasn't been that. He's still, when you watch him, he's still that ability to beat the press just with his composure, his dribbling. But I just don't think he's had as strong an influence as previous maybe two campaigns at Ibrox.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I just still think that... I still had him higher than Lundstrom and number three on my overall list, because I just still think he's an excellent player. I think he's maybe been hurt this season a little bit. First half of the campaign, or first 3 months, whenever Gerrard left, I think he was a victim... One of many victims of a kind of malaise that came over the club in general, especially after they didn't reach the Champions League. It was kind of like, I think really that took the wind out of Rangers' sails for a little bit. It was kind of like, okay, because they'd been progressing, and that was like the next natural stop was Champions League, and it was kind of expected that we're going to do it. And then they didn't, and he was one of those guys that maybe were like, oh, okay, that now I've kind of achieved all I can really do in Scotland. Do I leave? I was actually a bit surprised that he signed a new contract. He did, and then he's somebody who I just don't maybe think fits what Giovanni Bronckhorst wants as much as he did under Gerrard. But he's still a tremendous player, as you say. His dribbling ability, the snake hips he has to just kind of rotate out of trouble. He's a very good defensive midfielder as well, in terms of, again, very similar to what I said about Benny Benningame. Scores very high for defensive duel percentage, but very low for fouls given away. So he's just somebody, again, who just manages to get his foot in time and again and get the ball, regardless of what angle he seems to be coming at. And so, yeah, that's why I've got him as high as I do. Right, who's your number three?
Ryan Jack.
Right, who the fuck else have you got?
So I'm guessing it's Stephen Davis you've left out.
Yeah, have you got Stephen Davis at number two?
I've got Stephen Davis at number two, yeah.
You are fucking mental.
How?
Didn't he play for about 4 months? Because he was shit at the start of the season. And then Van Bronckhorst barely played him at all. And he's only really played him recently. He's been good recently. But, yeah. I mean, come on.
Form is temporary, Fowler. Class is permanent.
Yes, his class is not permanent when you're 37.
He has still got a couple of years left in him. And I just...
Yeah, he's still number two. He is not better than Ryan Jack. I am not having this at all. This is outrageous.
I think Stephen Davis is a tremendous football player, and you can see his intelligence with and without the ball, his passing long and short is still absolutely brilliant. I don't think there's anyone that could rival him, the versatility in his passing. he is awarded there for lifetime achievement of just being a brilliant player. You have to consider that Ryan Jack also has barely played in the league this season. I think he's played nine games.
Yes, but that has been pretty much only due to injury. It has been only due to injury. Whereas Stephen Davis went missing for a while because he just looked like he was done. And he's proven himself to not be done, fair enough. But still, there was a lot of this season where Stephen Davis was a complete afterthought, and I think it's I should probably have him in my list, but I was never going to have four Rangers players on my list. I was never going to pick more than three for one club.
It probably meant having to leave just because he's the oldest Davis out. I didn't want to do that.
Okay, fair enough. It would have been quite wild if you'd left off Lundstrom, Kamara or Jack. Not quite as wild as having Davis ahead of all of them, but still.
I don't know.
Might
be an oversight, but I honestly think it was one of those players that you watch and you just think, fuck me, you are a good player. And even still, a good player.
Yeah, so we were talking about Ryan Jack before then, and Ryan Jack is, somebody who... It's been a shame that Ryan Jack has been absent for the best part of a year, really. Like you say, he's only played nine times, and he was injured last March. So it's really been a year that he's not been fully fit. And you just hope that he gets that fitness soon enough and he can hit the ground running next season, because he's too good a player to be left kind of festering in the stands, or, you know, having to, as he's been doing quite a lot recently, having to come out because the club are kind of looking after his fitness and kind of keeping him for the bigger games. But just somebody who, his use of the ball is outstanding. He's another one who's a good, strong kind of defensive player as well. Somebody who also gets forward quite a lot. He's seventh overall for touches in the box, which is quite impressive for somebody who at the start of his kind of Aberdeen career was, I mean, I certainly wouldn't think he would, at that point he would progress to this type of guy who was a number six, big, really progressing to being a number eight and gaining that much confidence to go forward and impact games more. And you've seen when he plays for Scotland, the guy's just, there's a touch of class about Ryan Jack that just kind of radiates through his play.
Yeah, he's a player that gets better and better. I didn't realise he'd played so little this season, and I think if he'd played more, he is probably the only player on this list who could get anywhere near number one.
And our number one, perhaps controversially when you're talking about defensive midfielders, but set through our criteria at the start, he has to count as a defensive midfielder. We've both got the same guy.
Yeah.
It's Callum McGregor.
Yeah, he has to, because he is now the base of the Celtic midfield. And when he filtered him through the successful defensive actions, defensive duels, blah, 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 it doesn't feature highly just because Celtic have the way they play. He doesn't really have to do that, but he has to provide in different ways, and he does that. His longevity, his consistency is just incredible. His ability on the ball, you think at times you probably shouldn't be a Scottish player, but he is, and that's again a new generation of Scottish players coming through. You look at the way he plays, and he's really found a different level. He's went up 2, 3, 4 levels for Scotland as well. You talk about Ryan Jack alongside Billy Gilmore. Reads the game so well, and again within. He's shown that he didn't have to replace Scott Brown like for like. He didn't have to be that charging about, shouting, snapping into tackles. He can lead in a different way, and he's absolutely done that. And he's been, see if for example, Postecoglou came in and it was McGregor who left and Brown had signed a new deal. I think he would have found it very, very a lot more difficult than he has this season.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, McGregor is just, he's a terrific player to watch. The way he just skips with the ball as well, like the movement that he has is just kind of, it's somebody who's quite fascinating to watch, I think, just the way that he runs with the football. He's just a very entertaining player. Somebody who, to be fair, he has played that deeper role quite a few times for Celtic. And yeah, maybe not the best in terms of defensively. I also think as well, having watched him play the deeper role for Scotland, that I think he sometimes struggles with with receiving the ball with his back to the rest of the pitch, as you sometimes have to do, is that player. He doesn't quite have the... You're comparing him to Scott Brown. Scott Brown's one of his best attributes, I thought, was kind of like almost having eyes in the back of his head. So when anybody closed him down, he would just immediately kind of shift position and get Celtic started the other way. And then the team are kind of one man down. The opposing defence are one man down because somebody's had to go out and pressure him. McGregor maybe struggles a little bit with that. But with literally everything else, he's pretty good. Because he's... Yeah, he's not the greatest of defender, but he's somebody that is tenacious as well and is very happy to get stuck in. And just the best part of his game for deep is his ability to just drive play forward. And just, you've got the three guys at Celtic who are all good at that, and it just becomes an absolute nightmare for opposition players to try and deal with. So, and yeah, especially like if you compare him and Ryan Jack, because of the fact that, yeah, I would say McGregor's a better player anyway, but you can have more of an argument. But with Ryan Jack missing... This see, it's weird though, because I do think Jack suits Scotland more, but I think in the Scottish Premiership McGregor's better. But this season, with Jack playing so few games, I think that there's no doubt it's the number one. Although, of course, you and Jack is number three, so I don't know, you maybe got a different doubt.
No, I really like Ryan Jack. It just Stephen Davis gets in there. I really like Stephen Davis, just really like him,
and
he's played more. And I think that you have to say that for someone who's 37 to have been written off and then come back at a really key part of the season and contribute and show that he's not finished, speaks volumes.
Fair enough. Right, that'll do us. Thank you very much for joining me, Joe.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
And thank you to everybody for listening. If you would like to hear... Well, I don't want to promise this because it's not been recorded yet, but it should be getting recorded this evening. So I'm hopeful that there will be another top 12 list for the lower leagues. So I'm not going to split that up into defensive midfielders and centre midfielders, because the lower leagues, a lot of teams just play 4-4-2, so it's a lot easier. So Sean and it's not going to be Fraser Clark this time, but Sean and another guest are going to do the top 12 centre midfielders for the lower leagues, and I will aim to have that podcast up at the same time as this one. If not, there is plenty, and that's going to be in the patreon.com/terracepodcast. If not, we're currently in the mix of our season review series right now. We've done Hibs, Livingston, I've just recorded before I talk to you, Joel, so that'll be going up as well, or if it's not up already by the time I post this. So there's plenty of content on that to check out. Once again, that's patreon.com/terracepodcast. Right, Joel, that'll do us. Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.